Board Games Insider, a proud member of the Dice Tower Network. But just how did Tom Vassell allow this to happen? The world may never know.
This is Board Games Insider, where Ignacy Chevicek, president of Portal Games, and Stephen Bonacor, the podfather of gaming, discuss hobby board game publishing from the inside, giving you news, advice, and a look behind the curtain into the hobby board game industry. Ladies and gentlemen, here are Ignacy and Stephen.
Hello, hello, my American friend. How are you?
Who are you?
I'm famous designer from Poland, Ignacy Trzewiczek.
And this is Stephen Bonacor, the podfather of gaming. This is episode 161. We're recording this on September 2nd, 2020. Board Games Insider is a proud member of the Dice Tower Network. And if my life was a chess game, Tom Vassell would be but a pawn, and I would sacrifice him early and often. How's it going, buddy?
It's amazing, amazing. We are recording for the second time video. I hope for many, many comments about our previous episodes and how people like this new formula. So good mood here.
Yeah, very good mood. And I, right before this, so you know, we record the episode a week approximately before it drops. So this morning, the first video episode dropped, and the first comment we got was, Ignacy is the pretty boy, not Bonacor. And I'm like, what? Oh, my. Come on, I'm better looking.
Greetings to all my fans.
Oh, my goodness. All right, Ignacy, tell us, what is happening at Portal Games?
We are once again in this very weird situation that I'm going to report the event that hasn't happened yet, but for our listeners already happened. So this is always super confusing for us.
Time travel, it's amazing.
But hopefully, yes. Hopefully, we are after the Day of the Moloch event, the one-day event on our Twitch channel and our YouTube channel when we were celebrating Neuroshima Hex lore, Neuroshima Hex universe. And we announced a couple of things. So first off, hopefully we released a new app. I hope it will happen. On September 5th, a new app from Portal Games Digital, Neuroshima Convoy. This is the card game I designed a couple of years ago, and now it is in an app version. So it is my design, asymmetric. One player is playing Moloch robots trying to destroy New York. Sorry, fans from the New York. But the other player is playing the brave soldiers who wants to stop the robots, who wants to stop the bad Moloch. The game is super asymmetric, great gameplay. And you're able to play online, so I can play against Steven can play against Tom Vassell, etc., etc. So a ton of fun for all of you, especially in this COVID era.
Nice.
So hopefully this is what is already available through Apple Store and Google Play Store. We also announced and started pre-orders for Neuroshima Hex Anniversary Edition. We call it the Year of the Moloch Edition, you know, once again to celebrate this very event. And it is a huge box with a space for all 20 armies, with their new rulebook, with their new campaign, five scenarios campaign about the genesis of Moloch, with their new artwork on all the pieces, with the hardcover art book, with a that big, now we have a video so I can show, that big miniature of the Borgo, one of the enemies, like super pumped deluxe edition to celebrate the anniversary for Neuroshima Hex. And it is printed in 2020 copies. Once again, to celebrate this event. So only 2020 copies in English printed. As far as I know, I'm pretty sure we have each copy numbered, like number two, number three, number four. You can find this information on our website, portalgamesus.com. So check it out. A super special anniversary edition of Neuroshima Hex pre-order started. Neuroshima Convoy released. And for Polish market only, we also announced a Neuroshima role-playing game, but it's only for Polish market, so and nothing interesting for our English-speaking fans here. For my brag of the week, yesterday, the first reviews of Detective Season 1, this new detective game, started pop up and I'm super happy and super proud to announce that the first reviews are stellar. We got 9 out of 10 from Broken Meeple, super recommendation. We have Dan King from Game Boy Geek saying that he likes this new Detective even better than the base game of Detective, which is overkill. Like, this is like, no. The base game was my beloved child. Like, don't say that the new child is better. But both of them are obviously very, very cool. So I strongly recommend the game releases in a couple of days. I think we already closed the pre-orders. You can check it out on our website, but I think there is no pre-order left. The game releases on September 17th. Detective Season 1, 3 amazing cases, and the first reviews very, very positive for us, so I'm very proud. As for what's happening at Portal Games, what's happening at my offices, today is like the peak of the craziness for playtesting Vienna Connection. Vienna Connection is this new game I'm designing for the next year. You are going to be a spy in a Cold War era. This is once again a campaign game with four different missions. And as you can imagine, I have different playtesting groups on different stage of the campaign. So I have one group playing case number one, two groups playing case number three, four groups playing case number four. And I am printing these prototypes, printing these cases, and I have to remember, these guys already played number two, they're waiting for number three. These guys play number three, they want number four. They play number one, but they want to rematch it. Mess. But this is a true roller coaster. All these playtesting groups, all these different cases, all these notes, and we have video now, so I can show like all these notes after each playtest, what to change. But as for now, I'm super excited. It's going to be amazing, amazing game. We're going to be spy, visiting Europe, dealing with some secret KGB operations, fun stuff. But now it's the peak of the whole operation.
Sounds really cool.
So this was happening. Yes, like when you started the design, you hope what you will achieve. Now when I have this final version, when I see the playtesters and it really works as I dreamed, and they're, you know, decoding messages, listening to the KGB, you know, some reports, trying to check on the maps, the situation, like this is really, really digging the being a spy.
And cool this stuff. Is Vienna Connection?
Vienna Connection, because the whole plot starts in Vienna, and then you will visit different countries in Europe, and yeah, fun stuff.
What's your tentative release quarter for it? Sometime next year, or
my production told me I have 8 weeks to finish all the
eight
thing.
More weeks, that's it.
And I, yes, and so yeah, this is the final steps, and it will be the first half of the next year.
That's
will be
pretty fast.
Store, so yes, that's why I'm so excited, because it's the final stage, final meters to finish. So this is it. As you guys see me now in the video version, I'm smiling sometimes. Especially when I'm talking about my design. So, yes, this is a good time these days. How's your retirement?
Retirement is great. It's awesome.
Two smart gentlemen.
Anything you want to mention about Facebook, or is it too sensitive?
No. Nothing changes. The person I mentioned last week is trying to help me, but there is no effect whatsoever. As for now, so... in 2 days, I will have a 1 month anniversary of being without Facebook. And this is even getting worse, because now we are afraid that this is some super serious problem, because 2 days ago, Facebook unfreeze or unlock or whatever verb you want to use a part of my account. So I can now run ads, advertisement on American site. But rest is still freezed. So, like, something is happening, but, you know, like, they are processing something.
Wow.
So it doesn't look even better, but worse. Like, something happened, but it is not, like, unfreezing everything. Unfreezing just part of the thing, and still no contact with them. So, yeah.
Crazy stuff.
It's going to be, a super, super, super weird story from Ignat. Yeah. One day, hopefully, I will get back to Facebook. Sure. As I said, it is not a personal thing. I can live without Facebook, but it's a problem for my company.
Absolutely.
Right? We will see what will happen upcoming.
All right. Over at the Podfather of Gaming, still challenging everybody. Please come over. Let's reestablish my social media. Follow me on Twitter, please, @PodfatherGaming. Like me on Facebook, which is /PodfatherGaming. And probably most important of all, subscribe to my YouTube channel. You can just search for The Podfather of Gaming. I'm getting close to 100 subscribers. Once I do that, you get a custom URL, which is kind of cool. And of course, once you do that, you can get notified when we drop the video portion of the podcast. And maybe it's easier for you to watch videos once in a while. Or not, but you can at least tell your friends, hey, you don't listen to podcasts? You can now watch Bonacor and Chevycheck on video. You can check us out and look at my prettier face. My pretty with his very sexy, sexy beard that I have grown. No, Ignacy will not comment on that. All right. Every Thursday at 7 p.m. Eastern Time and Sunday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time, I am still doing Happy Hour with the Podfather, rebranded from Happy Hour with the Stronghold. And I've committed to doing this at least through the end of the year. So, you know, we have a lot of people showing up that you know, just need some positivity in their lives. They're a little bit lonely, you know. We're all so separated. So just come on over and chat and listen in. And we've got some great ongoing jokes about Bonacore's underwear and currywurst and other controversies. What is Jason eating tonight is a big one now these days. Jason Levine shows up for just about everyone, and God, that boy can eat. And he's also in great shape because he works out like crazy these days. So come over and listen to us. And you to find out where you can do that, just go over to Facebook at the Podfather Gaming page, and the events are there, and you click on the event and it gives you the Zoom link to get in. Of course, also, I'm on the Dice Towers Board Game Breakfast, co-hosting with Z Garcia and my bestest buddy in the world, Tom Vassell, and that is every Thursday morning at 10 a.m. Eastern Time. And that is live. We do board game news. We have a game show where I have beaten both Tom and Z now, so I am 2-0 on the show, beating them at their own games. And we do contributor segments in between. So all of the various contributors to the Dice Tower Network have video segments. So we're live and some recorded videos that go on as well. It's a lot of fun for another 1 hour live video. And you can chat along in the chat. And sometimes we pick up those questions and things like that. News of the week here at, I still call it, the Stronghold South. I still use that name because my house has always been called the Stronghold. So here at the Stronghold South, I lost internet and cable this week for an hour.
Ooh.
Dude, I Ooh. Almost lost my bleep when this happened. I'm serious. I was like cursing, screaming. I was on with Comcast Xfinity trying to figure this out. Nobody else had a problem in my neighborhood. At least I couldn't see it because there's in the app, it tells you if you have an area outage, in which case you understand. Okay, they may be doing something. Okay, nobody else, just us. I was livid. It came back. The internet came back after about a half hour and the cable TV after about an hour. A guy was supposed to show up this morning to check it out. But since I had it and I didn't want him traipsing around my house in the middle of this, you know, recording, maybe he's going to take down my internet, I just canceled it. So everything's working swimmingly now. But man, in 2020, this is not the thing you want to have happen. You can lose internet because you can't do anything else between internet and cable TV. I almost died. I was going to die. It's no longer a first world problem. We used to say, hashtag first world problem. It's like, no, this is like a problem when you don't have anything else to do. I might have to like go outside and like go for a walk. And I don't want to do that. I want to just chill out on the internet and watch TV. Photo or video of the week, well, you might be watching it right now, and that's the podcast, the first one, which was last week's episode. Hey, guys, it dropped today, so that would have been episode 160, dropped today on the Podfather of Gaming. Hopefully, Ignacy will start linking them up on his YouTube channel as well. Ignacy, if you're not, I'm going to tell you how to do it. Just go over and just link it up, put it in a playlist over there as well, so people who don't normally come to me, they'll come to you, so that'd be fun. We'll have it on both sites. So please check it out. And that's it. It's been kind of a light news week in general for me. Looking to possibly take a small vacation coming up. I'll keep you guys posted. But I'm not going to stop doing this podcast. Don't worry. I'll still be there from an undisclosed location. Check me out when I get there. All right, Ignacy, let's get to the...
I'm on YouTube. I type in Podfather. The first recommendation is Podfather Ricky Gervais. Then Podfather Thanksgiving, then Podfather Christmas. So
the
I'm typing now Podfather of, and then it suggests me Podfather of Harlem, Godfather of Harlem, Godfather of Harlem Netflix. So I'm typing now Podfather of Gaming, and enter. And I see Podfather of Gaming, 99 subscriptions, and Ignaz, yes, and Ignaz will subscribe to you right now. Bang! And you have 100 subscribers. You're welcome, sir.
Thank you. That's very funny that you became the 100th subscriber to the channel. YouTube's probably going to be sending me a message right now that I can change my link now, a custom link. So YouTube.com/PodfatherGaming is what it's going to be. As soon as I get a chance, I'm going to do that. Thank you, Ignacy, and thank you, everybody else.
You're welcome.
Appreciate it. Let's get to the news of the industry and the event deck.
The event deck. Here's the latest news from the board game industry.
All right. Got some, like, little bit of news here that, you know, some guy. He's not really a known guy in the industry, but, you know, we'll talk about him. You know, why not? Eric Lang, the very noted designer, leaving his executive role at CMON, or CMON, as they like to be called, which I just say, come on. No, it's CMON. It always was CMON. He's going to focus on game design on his own and on public advocacy. So let me read this, and then we'll talk about it. So this is huge, huge news, I think, for the industry. Premier game designer Eric M. Lang is stepping down from his role as director of game design of CMON Limited. On September 1st, which was yesterday, the company announced Lang plans to focus on freelance game design and his growing involvement with activism. He leaves CMON with a long-term plan in place. Quote, over the past few months, we drafted a long-term release plan with some truly great titles, which will continue to bear fruit for many years to come, Eric said. Now felt like the right time for me to return to my roots, focusing on game design and public advocacy for our amazing hobby. Lang joined the company in early 2017 after 20 successful years as a successful freelance designer for multiple top-tier companies. As he joined the company, he noted the importance of making the hobby industry more inclusive and accessible, a goal on which he continued to work during his time at CMON. So, first of all, as soon as I saw this, you know, I had known about this already. You know, Eric, we talk a lot, so he had told me about it. But the first thing I did was send it over to Ignacy. I'm like, Ignacy, did you see this? And your wife had just told you about it, right?
I don't have a Facebook. I have to wait for my wife to bring me news.
That's
of Steven.
Right.
Like,
so I mean, Eric is a wonderful guy, a wonderful friend of mine. He has not only an amazing career in the industry, like 20 years already, 23 maybe now or something like that. If he 20 years was in 2017. You know, when he joined CMON, he joined as part of the management team. He was an executive there. So that comes with all of the pressures and the needs to keep a company running, as well as do really what he wants to do as well, which is just purely design. Now, he was doing design work, and he's credited with many games over the last few years at CMON. But he had to manage a large group of people, a global group of people, including people not only in Singapore, in the U.S., in Brazil. He had a team in many countries, in many time zones. So, you know, all of that is a big stress point, obviously. And what he really wants to do, he wants to design games. So he is now going to be able to do that. And he's told me that many of those designs are still going to CMON, you know, because that's the vehicle that he likes to use. He still has friends. And I guess one of the big points of this is there is zero animosity between him and CMON. So I like to tease him now and say he's just retiring, but he's not. He's going to be heavily involved now in game design, like hardcore game design, without all of the problems and the stresses of managing staff and a division of a company.
Yeah, this is, yes, it was very interesting news back then 3 years ago when we had this big news that Eric is joining CMON, and I talked with him long about this change in his career, because as we luckily personally we know Eric, he loves so many things to do at once, and all these prototypes and go to convention and chat with people, and he's like a rock star. He loves energy, and then he started a career, as you just said, managing people, checking the prototypes, developing games, doing some maybe boring office work, sometimes managing projects. And so it was not super rock star activities. So he did amazing job. I'm as our listeners know, I'm a Polish publisher for Simon, so I publish many of the games Simon is doing. So I publish many games that Eric was developing, the Gizmos being one of the most famous games, a family wave game, Gizmos, amazing stuff. It was developed by Eric, and there is many titles that have either name Eric Lang on the box or Eric Lang in the rulebook as a developer. He built the whole team in Singapore, and it was one of his tasks at Simon to build these development teams so they can bring more games and develop more games. He brought a ton of value to Simon, and now he's going back to be this funny dude on every single convention and pitching games to different publishers. So I'm happy for him. I was very happy for him to join Simon because I knew it was a huge task, but a great challenge. And now I'm happy for him to be once again free bird to go and create new games without this whole pressure, as you mentioned. So great news for everybody, maybe except Simon, because they are losing a great developer. Of course, he trained a ton of people there already for this couple of years, so there is an army of great developers. But of course, there is no company on the planet who would be happy having Eric Lang left the company. That's
sure,
obvious, right?
Sure. And I think in my conversation with him, the most important takeaway he gave to me was that he wanted to do what he absolutely loves the most, and that is just getting in and designing games. And he's looking to design lighter games too. That's going to be a big thing. He wants a family game. He wants a big hit, of course. He wants something like a Ticket to Ride type thing that he can really put down and, you know, use as a retirement vehicle in the future. He's not ready for retirement yet. I tease him that he's now retired, but he's not. He's absolutely hardcore designing. You're still going to see the bigger games, which obviously will go to Simon, but I think we're going to see some interesting lighter fare from Eric with all of his talent. So I absolutely wish him the best. I think this is a great thing. He needs to have his soul more soothed with what he likes, rather than being a corporate person, a corporate drone, you might say, but a corporate person. So I think this is a great thing. So Ignacy, I'm coming out of retirement. I don't know if I told you this. I'm coming out of retirement, I think, because Wizards of the Coast is looking for a vice president of Dungeons and Dragons. Come on! This is my job. I gotta post this job. They've actually posted a job. You'll need to have at least 10 years of experience in business, marketing, or product management, and know how to make money from consumer franchises. Check. This is a reminder that WotC views D&D as a franchise. You'll need to be an inspiring leader and have outstanding communication skills. Check. Those bullet points on PowerPoint won't cut it. You'll need to be a self-starter and a force of change. Check. That last requirement reads, quote, a strong agent for change, accustomed to accountability and driving improvement with teams, with examples to share, outlining improved team dynamics and performance within diverse environments. Change and accountability are words the business is sometimes attached to the unpleasantness of letting employees go. So Wizards of the Coast, to their credit, is going to take a chance to remind their prospects that they are an equal opportunity employer as well. So they're literally looking for somebody to take over D&D, to take over the entire franchise, and obviously take it to another level. Don't know. The old vice president of D&D was Nathan Stewart. What happened? Promotion to head of franchise for both D&D and Magic the Gathering. So he's actually moving up to be part of like all of their major franchises. You can actually go and check out the jobs at wizards.com and apply for this job.
Apply.
But seriously, if you're going to do such a thing, and no, I'm not going to be applying for this job, because you know what this job means? It means a lot of hard work, and I'm not working anymore. I don't want hard work. I want to relax. So if you really want to do this, you're going to have some serious business cred, not like, you know, ran a a lemonade stand or something like that. It's a serious corporate job at Wizards of the Coast, but I see us like in about 3 months, you know, having an announcement about who's taking this job. I wonder if we'll know the person. I don't think we will. What do you think?
From my perspective, for Sanjay positions, they are looking for some high-level manager who might not be attendee of many conventions, but he is from the different industry. He needs to know some things about Dungeons and Dragons, but definitely he needs to be a high-level manager. So we will see if this is somebody from our group of like friends and industry folks, or somebody from different industry who will just transit.
It's going to be a powerful management type person, not from our circle of people in hobby board games. But we'll see. We'll see. I could be wrong. So Stonemaier brings sales in-house, and he hires Alex Schmidt from Greater Than Games. Stonemaier Games is taking distribution brokerage, basically sales, which it formerly outsourced to fellow St. Louis-based company Greater Than Games, in-house. Stonemaier CEO Jamie Stegmaier said in a blog post on Monday, to handle the new work, Stonemaier is hiring former Greater Than Games account manager Alex Schmidt, who handled the Stonemaier account for Greater Than Games as director of sales. Schmidt's duties will also include direct sale coordination, localization partner coordination, and as a liaison between Greater Than Games and Stonemaier. Greater Than Games will continue to handle some logistical functions for Stonemaier, including warehousing, freight, shipment, and fulfillment. Schmidt spent 3 years at Greater Than Games before making the move to Stonemaier. The change is being made because of the amount of direct communication with distributors Stonemaier is already handling as volume has grown, and because shipments to distributors are often made directly with China, eliminating the need for Greater Than Games to handle the shipments, Stegmaier said. So if you think about this, what Jamie is doing here is he's been using Greater Than Games, the logistics and fulfillment arm of them, to do all of his sales, because they've got a huge warehouse. They started doing their own sales a while ago. They'd warehouse games, and they do it for many small publishers, and then they would ship out to distributors from there. Since Jamie had to be doing so much communication with the distributors, essentially he took the sales role, just hired Alex out of, who's by the way a great guy, I know Alex, he hired him out of Greater Than Games, I'm sure with consent, and they will do all the sales in-house, and then they will use the warehousing and fulfillment of Greater Than Games to do the, you know, the manual labor portion of it. I think it's a great idea. Why pay an extra fee there where you can have somebody who's 100% dedicated to making sure that they're establishing relationships, constantly communicating, and all the great things that you need to do to make your sales bigger and better year over year. So good move. Happy for Jamie. Happy for Alex. This, I think, is a really good thing. And it's part of that whole thing of kind of bringing more stuff in-house, stripping out certain costs, and also maybe going with even less distributors over time.
I was always surprised how Jamie was able to pull this off being one person. And then we made a comment when he finally hired one person, and then he's hiring another person. Like for me, with amazing titles he have in his catalog, with the volume of games he's selling, why he's not having like 15 employees and him being on retirement? Like, this is obvious choice to bring more people to the company, to let company grow. Like, at some point you need to have more people to care for the growth of the company. And what you just said, if Alex was already working with Jamie for 3 years, it was said in the news. So he knew the catalog very well, he knew the product very well, and now he's just transitioning to the full time for Jamie, so he can be fully dedicated to the game. So it is like obvious choice. I don't know, but I would guess that we will see more and more hires from Stonemaier. Like, the company is rocketing in sales, rocketing in popularity. It is no longer times when Jamie had two successful Kickstarters. Like, this is like a power machine these days.
Yep, agreed. So this is a very long and complicated article that we'll only briefly go through because there's so much here. But ICV2 reported, and the head of ICV2 is Milton Grip, he wrote an article on this, and he says that we've been living through a live experiment in the attention economy. And what does he mean by that? The idea of attention economics is that attention is a resource, and with information and media increasingly cheap to deliver, one that is increasingly scarce, everyone that wants that attention has to compete with every other bright and shiny bauble catching the light of the afternoon sun. To go a little deeper, so there's a long list of activities that people used to spend time and attention on that have either partially or completely disappeared since COVID-19. Meals and drinks with friends, live sports, live entertainment, movies, televised sports, shopping as a recreation, as opposed to like rushing to a store, grabbing stuff and getting the heck out of there, right? That's sort of the current thing. So our attention has to go someplace else. So where is all this newfound time and money going? That's where it gets interesting. In addition to activities distant from geek culture like outdoor recreation, there have also been big moves of time into geek culture categories. And this goes on and gets very deep. But if you think about this, it's a very interesting thing that is now playing out in our lives and how we, as a society, and as a global society, are changing where our attention is being pointed and therefore where our money is being spent. And some of that, you know, obviously is with other geek culture items. Nasi, any comments on that?
Yeah, we discussed this many times already, how COVID influenced the sales of the board games. How many of you, instead of going for a bike, instead of going to play football or whatever, you're playing softball or whatever else, you are sitting at home and playing Robinson Crusoe, Terraforming Mars. And we see Netflix being very, very happy with what's happening, with people being at home and watching movies. So the article we are now discussing shows like a big picture, like a big data, how the things are changing. We feel it personally, being less outdoors, being more in front of the TV. We discuss every single week that the virtual conventions are something new these days because people cannot travel. I absolutely agree what is said in the article. And looking at the big data, it's quite interesting. But yeah, definitely we are in a world of attention. If you are going to watch Netflix, or if you are going to play a board game, or maybe you are going to play on PlayStation, this is like every person on the planet has a fixed number of free time, and we want to grab it for us.
And the last comment I'll make is was kind of his conclusion. He said that his big takeaway from the experiment is how clear it is that tabletop games and comics compete with every leisure activity that takes time or money. And he used to think that it was only competing for similar activities. But now, your competition, Ignacy, the competition of everybody in gaming is not just other game things or even geek things. Your competition is everything that people can spend time on, including just watching a movie or something
Absolutely. Like
that. It's a very different shift for the world and in the way that we have to think about our businesses. And with that very, very deep comment, let's go on to Strategy and Tactics.
Strategy and Tactics. Some advice for you from Board Games Insider.
All right. We have Bonnie Doiron, who is Madbana. I know her. She posts a lot. She says, Ignacy and Steven, we always hear about the success stories. Games you saw, helped develop, and eventually brought proudly to market. But my question is, have you ever had a project that you believed in, got to development, and then had it fall apart too much to actually take it into those final steps and release it? What have your experiences been, and how did you ultimately walk away without taking it personally, or those involved take it personally? Thanks for the great podcast. Ignacy, so I'm sure you've had projects that like you thought were great and it just fell apart for some reason. I mean, you have any ones or any anecdotes you want to mention?
Yes, not that many funny stories with projects being not released. We had last year we had to make decision And the prototype that was submitted to us 3 years earlier, and we are developing, we were in the contact with the designer, we are giving him feedback, he was fixing the prototype. Then, because we are still not very happy with the overall flow of the game, we were developing it in-house, and then once again in contact with the designer. And after this whole work, this almost 2 years of trying to change things and change the flow of the game, at some point we gave up and we said we don't feel we are moving forward. We don't feel we are getting where we want to get with this game. And it was extremely sad, a Skype call with the designer when I said, I'm very sorry, but we have to cancel. We have to give up, and we wish the best for the designer. I will not mention the name of the game because I hope he will find the other publisher. Maybe he will find a different developer teams who will bring this game to the press, to the manufacturer, and I will be the first to buy it because I love the premise of the game. I love the potential it had. But we were not able to pull it off as a final game, and we had to cancel the project. And it devastating on so many levels. On the level of us as developers who wanted to bring this game to the market because we believe it's very interesting. Devastating on a personal level because over these many months we became friends with the designer. Like, we had so many Skype calls, so many conferences, so many, you know, brainstorming moments. And then you have to say, it will not work out, sorry. So not many fun anecdotes from that, but yes, it happens. It happens, and what I know from the industry, many publishers have such a situation that at some point they have to say, sorry, we are canceling the project, and because they need to move on. Yes, you cannot develop the game too long because it is all cost. Yes, it is hours spent. So sometimes tough decisions.
Yeah.
Yes.
My types of these issues occur around like licensed agreements mostly, where in the end we couldn't do the game. And this one was an interesting one. I'll mention the names. It's okay, I guess. I hope. Yeah, why not? I can mention them. That we were supposed to do North American rights for the game Nemesis, which came out and was very, very good game. And that was with your...
From my arch enemy Rebel
with your
Games.
Arch enemy Rebel Games. We were going to be doing the game. But due to some contractual issues with the designers, they had to exclude us and they had to rush the game. And there was... this whole to do, and I was heartbroken because Rebel came to me at Essen and said, we want you to do this. And I looked at what they were doing and I'm like, I love this. I love the idea. I love the space theme. I love this. This is creepy. This is so up my alley. I mean, I just beautiful ideas on this game. And I was like, and then finally I couldn't do it. And it's heartbreaking. But you move on. You know, we're all adults. You win some, you lose some, and I've won more than I've lost, so to speak. And in the end, you know, if you're hanging your hat, if you're putting everything into one item, and you lose it, you're gonna then be disappointed in life. You gotta have a variety of things that you want to do and that makes you excited, so that any one disappointment doesn't like ruin everything for you.
Yep.
James Burns, who's at J. Dash Train 1 on the Geek. When board game designers come to you to pitch a game, how long do you think the game pitch should be for time is short at conventions and trade shows? So how long, Ignacy, should a designer pitch a game before you like want to like kill yourself, like I can't listen anymore?
It depends how fast you speak. Of course, being serious, it is a very stressful situation for a designer. He comes to you with his hopes to sign a contract, to present the prototype. In most cases, these especially young designers are extremely stressed and nervous. They want to do their best. In many cases, especially in Essen, I don't know what's your experience in Essen, but most of them are non-native speakers because they are designers from France, from Germany, from all the different countries. So they are communicating not in the native language. They know... they have these 5 or 10 minutes to pitch you the idea. They know that you have scheduled like 10 meetings with different designers. Like, this is a very stressful situation for them. So I would definitely not go for them making jokes now. Like, if your pitch is more than 5 minutes, you're done. but it is a very difficult situation for both of us. You as a young designer who wants to do his best because this is his moment, this is his chance, and for us because we need in this short pitch understanding this very difficult environment, halls, crowds, etc., that we need to spot this amazing game that hopefully will be a hit for us in upcoming years. So for us, we want to find this this gem, this amazing game that will bring us success. For them is to find this dream come true and find publisher. So it is a very stressful situation for both of the sides. So I would definitely not go with the how long. But how do it well, right?
Do it well. Designers have to come extremely prepared. First thing, they've got to rehearse those pitches. This is my advice. I'm giving you advice. You have to rehearse them, and you've got to think about it from the perspective of who you're talking to. You're talking about somebody, obviously, a Bonacore or a Chevy Check, who are extremely versed in game design and things that they can and want to publish, but we don't know what your vision is. We don't know what you're trying to do. So we have a blank slate of the knowledge of your game. So you have to explain it at a high enough level that we understand the concept, and then we drill down into the mechanics, and then you take the questions on the lower and deeper level things. So in general, I like to see a game explained to me in like 10 – I always do 30-minute meetings. But I don't always expect them to go a full 30 minutes, meeting, especially if they're not good. Explain the game in under 10 minutes, and then let me ask questions about various things. And then if things are looking good, okay, take me through what a turn will look like in the game. And a designer should have a completely canned demo response. Stack that deck of cards so that the cards you want to come out are the ones that do come out. Make it the best possible turn or turns that you can show somebody. We don't have to play the game. You want to show me the game and how somebody would be playing it and what this card does and what when I get that resource, what do I do with it and things like that. So a half hour is the maximum amount of time that a designer will get, but they should explain that game in a 10-minute or so time frame, and then we go into details as we see fit.
I would definitely add that you are pitching the game, so it has to be a pitch, not a demo game. Like, we don't want you to explain the rules of the game. You need to pitch us the idea, what's interesting, and then we ask questions.
He also asks a silly question. He says, do you have a favorite meeple design?
In the game Imperial Setters, I also designed a meeple. The meeples that you see in the box, my project.
They're amazing. Incredible.
Yep.
I do not have a favorite. Not that I can think of right now. I'm sure that if I thought about it and looked at some games, I would come up. This one's from VNLT Star, who's at Manzo Zaidemai on Board Game Geek. Thank you for an interesting podcast where I can learn more of the industry and its development, as well as what's going on at formerly Stronghold and Portal Games. So here are some questions I am interested in. I'm from Lithuania, next to Poland, which is quite a small country, and to make a game Polish, it is not that easy just because of the gamers market is at least 10 times smaller than Poland and 100 times smaller than the US. So I wonder if a home market is a factor for your company's successes, at least in the beginning, or back when you started. Is the home market a factor for success? So let's start with that. Ignacy, is it important for you to have a big Portal Games presence in Poland? I would assume so, of course.
I would say that I am lucky that I was born in Poland, that is a big country in Europe. I have my very good friends, publishers from Czech, south of the Poland, small country, talented as me, super passionate as me, but in my country I can sell so many more games because the country is bigger. And for them to do a print run of 1,000 games is completely right. Different deal than for me print 1,000 games. So the how crazy it sounds, but it is true. If you're in a smaller country, there's less people living there, less customers. You cannot fight this. Like, this is brutal economics.
Yeah. And I'm gonna go a little bit deeper into what I think he's saying. I mean, if he was going to start a company, or if somebody in Lithuania was going to start a company, I literally would not focus on trying to sell the games hardcore in Lithuania or in Liechtenstein. Or, I mean, you know, these countries are too small to support true game. Unless, you know, you can always print rules, you know, in a native language, but you also want to print rules in other languages, probably mostly English. It's the default language of gaming, for better or worse. Therefore, you'll be able to get the games and sell them outside of your country. It's going to be very important for any startup company to sell the games outside of your home country, especially if it's a small country. But even if it's a pretty big country like Poland, you've got to sell outside. Stronghold Games could have only sold in North America and been successful, but we were able to reach the entire world due to a relationship with PSI, and they have worldwide sales distribution. So he also asks, there's also a consideration of Kickstarter, but it looks like it's becoming saturated and there are more supply there than demand, not speaking about additional costs for running it, which could be most likely used for traditional publishing. Is that a consideration? Kickstarter is just so important to the industry. Saturated, sure, but bring something different to your game, component-wise, theme-wise, gameplay-wise, and it'll get noticed on Kickstarter. And obviously don't have a huge threshold to launch it, but have a realistic one.
Yeah, well, the market is saturated on Kickstarter and on distribution level. So at Kickstarter, at least if your game is not super awesome, you will not lose money. You will just have your Kickstarter project not, you know, fulfilled. If you print the game and bring to distribution and then you fail, you just lost a ton of money. So if you are young and you're afraid of too many titles on the market, Kickstarter, very crowded, but at least you're not risking money.
Exactly. And his last question is, would you advise to try to do self-publishing or go with a publisher who's got higher volumes and obviously distribution? And my answer is, especially these days, you want to find a publisher for your game. Unless your goal is simply, you know what, I just want my name in a box and I'll do it myself. So I'll go on Kickstarter and I'll see how it goes. But once you do that, if it doesn't succeed, you're probably not going to get a publisher for it, because they might know that that happened and it didn't succeed for a reason. I would always, as a designer, I would try to get it to a professional publisher who might then work with you and do it on Kickstarter with you, but they'll have the infrastructure to do all that work for you instead of you doing it.
Yes, I absolutely agree. You can publish a couple of games at different publishers, create your brand, create your name, become famous, and then you can start your Kickstarter and cash in. And the reputation you have. And a side note, Steven just retired. I'm counting down 1 year, 2 years, maybe 3 years, and I will join him in retirement. Running business is a pain in the ass. Like, you don't want to do it.
It is a hard work. Eric Lang's going to join me in retirement soon. No, he's not. He's not. And I don't believe you're going to retire. You're too young to retire. All right. Anyway, let's move on and let's ask you guys some questions in our playtesting segment.
Playtesting, where Ignacy and Steven ask you questions.
All right, Ignacy, I didn't get a chance to update your language here, so you're on your own. Ask the question, and I'll see if I can change it as you go along.
Do you create home rules for the games you like, but feel like one or two small changes can make the game suited more to you and your group? So basically, you have the game, you like the game, and you feel like these few small tweaks and this game would be so much better. So you go for it, you play with different rules with your gaming group, and you enjoy the game better. Did you do that? Do you do this? Your group like it or not?
So you're asking if you create these home rules for games, and you do it because...
You're translating my question.
And you do it because, like, one or two small changes make it suitable for the group that you play with versus maybe, you know, that every person in there. I'm a purist for the most part. I don't like house rules. I kind of say to myself, for the most part, again, I'm going to make this not an absolute statement. I think that the game should be played the way the designer envisioned the game to be played. So I try not to use house rules at all. We, in my game group back in New Jersey, occasionally we would house rule something that just made it more approachable or just something more interesting or better for our group. And normally it wouldn't be something that we would create, or it might be something that we read online and we like, oh, you know what? That sounds like it's an interesting idea to tweak something. And I would always be like, it has to be agreeable to everybody or else it's not fair, because maybe somebody doesn't like that type of thing. So my short answer is no, I don't, but sometimes I do. I guess that's a little wishy-washy, but that's kind of the way I'm. Ignacy, do you go for home rules, and do you use them for this exact reason?
This question is better than I expected, because I have a 100 opposite answer than you. That's amazing, because it shows that we differ. Of course, I have zero respect for the official rules. And if something is not working for me, I'm changing with no remorse, absolutely. And that's it. That's super interesting, because my perception is that designer wanted me to have fun. So if his rules are not giving me fun, I'm just changing them so I have a fun, and I'm having a fun. And of course, we are not talking about changing the many rules, inventing some expansions. Like I even put here in the show notes, like examples. Like for example, there's many games that ask you to keep your resources behind the screen, so your opponents don't see them. Yes, and I have my gaming group who says this is stupid memory. I don't need to memorize what you have behind you. Just let's play without the screens, or like changes like that. Yes. So yes, I have zero respect for the official rules, and I'm changing them if I need them.
This is because you are a rules snob and a game designer. Well, I guess all game designers are rules snobs and think that they can do it better than the original designer. So
of course,
the heck with you. I guess you'll be happy to hear that when I play your games, I play them with your rules. But of course, those are the best rules, right? Of course.
Of course.
So we ask you, we question you out there. Do you create home rules for the games that you like? And is this because you like one or two small changes that make the game more suited for you and your group? So please, right now, go over to Board Games Insider's Facebook group. Facebook? Wrong.
No.
Go to our Board Game Geek Guild. Sorry about that. I got Facebook on my head. Ignacy's creating a thread right now in the Board Game Geek Guild. Ignacy, are you typing it? I can kind of see you doing it, sort of.
1,093 members as for today.
I guess we gained one or two there. Very good. Yep. Thank you, everybody. So he's going to create it. It'll say playtesting number 161 or wherever we are right now. And we're asking you this question. So go there and talk to us and let us know if you like to do house rules for your games. In the meantime, it's time for final scoring.
Final scoring. How to stay in touch with and up to date on Ignacy and Steven.
Thank you for listening so much. Help us spread the word about this podcast by telling your friends to download Board Games Insider wherever they like to get their podcasts. To ask us questions for our strategy and tactics segment, you must post them in the correct thread in our guild on Board Game Geek. To answer our question to you from our playtesting segment, also go to our guild on Board Game Geek and look for the thread with today's episode. Board Games Insider has a Facebook page, so please like us on Facebook. Also on Facebook, please like Ignacy's page and Steven's page, which is /Portal Publishing and /Podfather Gaming. Our websites are portalgames.pl, portalgamesus.com, and podfathergaming.com. Please go there, sign up for the newsletters, and get up-to-the-minute information on what's happening at Portal Games and with the Podfather. On Twitter, it's @Chevychek and @PodfatherGaming. Same on Instagram. And our YouTube channels, officially, Portal Games and the Podfather of Gaming. We hope to see you sometime in the future when we can again at a convention when this crisis is over. Board Games Insider was professionally edited by Matthew Jude from This Game is Broken podcast. And if you'd like him to edit your podcast, please contact him on Twitter or email at thisgameisbrokenpodcast@gmail.com. Ignacy, do you have anything special, something cool to report to the listeners that we're hiding from them until the last second?
My Facebook account is not working. Please help.
Please help. Help Ignacy. All right, everybody. Thank you very much for listening. And we'll see you in a week. And check us out so you can see our pretty faces. My pretty face.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to Board Games Insider with Ignacy Cevicek and Stephen Bonacore. Board Games Insider has been made possible by you, our listeners and hobby board game enthusiasts. Ignacy and Stephen thank you greatly for your support of the hobby board game industry. Follow both Portal Games and the Podfather of Gaming on Twitter. Sign up for their newsletters on their websites, PortalGamesUS.com and PodfatherGaming.com, and like both them and Board Games Insider on Facebook. Please join us next time on Board Games Insider.
You're listening to the Dice Tower Network, the home of smart people, insightful board gaming commentary, and Stephen Bonacore. Find out more at DiceTowerNetwork.com.